Welcome to the Catholic Sphere. Each week we have a different host and a different focus as we tackle topics important to Catholics around the globe. I'm your host this week, Debbie Cowden. And in today's episode, we'll be discussing the theology of home and how we can cultivate prayer and peace in our homes. My panelists today are leading voices in how to do just that. Noelle Maring is one of the creators of Theology of Home and co-author of the Theology of Home book series that's available at EWTN Religious Catalog. She joins us from California. Paige Ryan is a home designer and author who even had a career on HGTV. Now, her mission is to help families build up their domestic churches. Paige joins us from Maryland. And Claire Couchy is a blogger and content creator. So with her apostolate, Finding Philothea, she offers insight on fashion, lifestyle, etiquette, and living the Catholic faith that helps women across the world grow in virtue, confidence, and grace. She's joining us from Texas. Thank you, ladies, for being here with me today. Now, Noelle, can you set the stage for what Theology of Home is and how you're accomplishing your mission to help women overcome the many struggles of living out our vocations?
Yeah, well, great to be with you. So Theology of Home is the idea that home is not just a physical space. It's meant to be a foretaste of heaven, where we gain our identity, our belonging, our significance, where we form attachments, and we things we really need in order to walk out into the world with confidence. It's not just where we live, it's where we are shaped. And what happens in the home does not just stay in the home. You know, it flows out into society for better or for worse. It enters the voting booth. It becomes our institutions, our communities, our civic life, and our national identity. And so, you know, what happens in the home is highly significant. It, insofar as it shapes us, it also shapes society. But for too long, we have greatly undervalued what happens in the home. And I think that's because we're in a society that tends to value what we can commodify. So what we can sell, what we can measure. And the deeply human work of the home really resists those sort of superficial metrics. It's far deeper and more important than that. And so reclaiming and dignifying the dignity of the domestic is really the mission of Theology of Home, with the idea that the ordinary life has great spiritual significance, but we have to prioritize it in order to do it well and to recognize the important work that's being done there.
And it is truly important work. And Paige, you recognize this also because you are on a similar mission too. And you've said before that despite having a career in design and being like an expert in design, you've actually learned more about beauty and design from the Catholic Church than you had in your career. So what do you mean by that?
Certainly, Debbie, and thank you for having me. This is all of my favorite topics, and I'm delighted to speak about it with this group. And yes, I mean, per what Noelle said, the home has unbelievable significance. It's a sacred place where the future really does begin. It's the roots of our future, are better or worse, are in our homes. And when I was discerning my faith, I'm a Catholic convert, and when I came into the church, I learned about this expression, the domestic church. And I learned that it's a very significant part of the overall church. And we have the priests and bishops, we have the parish, and we have the domestic church. This is a very significant life force of the Catholic Church. And I found that in the catechism even, it's defined, the domestic church is defined as the Christian family. So right off the bat, the church is saying it's people over things. And so I had been reared in sort of this secular design world where it really is a focus on the material. It really is a focus on the composition. It really is a focus on the visual experience of the home. And we see that, you know, just now, of course, in social media, how many images in front of our face. But even before social media, there were interior design magazines where the image sort of reigned supreme. How that family operates, the quality of the relationships, the quality of the time, how healthy people are, how the dynamic, we never even knew that. And I think that those subjects became sort of like, well, we'll just assume that all works. And if you have beauty in the home, the relationships and everything checks out. Well, that's an incorrect assumption. That doesn't work that way. I wish it was that easy. I wish if you could make a room pretty, then all the relationships just checked out and everything else was beautiful and harmonious. And then we can grow in virtue if I have my room is beautiful, but that didn't happen for me. So interior design is a great set of tools, but I think our faith teaches us the home is a sacred place, but it's also a battleground. We have very, very, very important work to do there as women. And when we're focused on the material, when we're focused on the composition, when we're focused on just these, what was really meant to be a set of tools, I think we actually miss the true purpose of the home and the true work. you know, as women, as a young woman, I thought my greatest work, my greatest contribution was to make my home beautiful. That is not my greatest hope. That is not my greatest work or my greatest contribution. Mm-hmm. That is a tool I use in my broader vocation. So I'm still learning for sure, but I'm also learning what of interior design is useful and what is not.
And it's important to understand how it is a tool, because Claire, what the church considers beautiful and what the mm-hmm. world considers beautiful, they're usually not in step. And to make matters worse, we're inundated mm-hmm. by these false images of beauty, both in the physical appearance and with the design of our homes. Like Paige had mentioned, that we end up with these unrealistic mm-hmm. expectations of what makes a home beautiful. So help us clear up some of the confusion about what we're seeing on social media in particular mm-hmm. When it comes to beautiful homes and what makes a beautiful home.
Yes, and that's something as women we have to stand guard against, especially within our homes. We're the gatekeepers of our home, and we need to stand guard, because that can quickly lead to vanity. It can quickly lead to overconsumption. It can quickly lead to us not living out our vocation in its fullest. So what I like to look at is definitions, and to look at the definition of beauty. And one of my favorite definitions comes from Dr. John Mark Maravalli. And he says, beauty is the unity of surprise and order. And I love that definition. We see that so beautifully within our homes, that unity of surprise and order. And I think a beautiful illustration of this is the dinner table. There's that order. Maybe we're eating at the same time each day. Maybe people have the same seats at the table as a family. Maybe the same meals are rotated, but there's also that element of surprise there too, where maybe the conversation, someone tells a funny joke, or the mood of the day is different dependent on what happened that day. There's that unity of surprise and order, and how beautiful, maybe to focus on that, that's true beauty versus, okay, the wood of the table might be stunning, but that will never trump the conversation of the family dinner, where there's that hierarchy of beauty. And so with social media, the focus for too long has been editing out what we don't like, or we can put a filter on to make it more beautiful. The focus needs to turn back to that true hierarchy of beauty and encourage us in that. Otherwise, it can quickly lead to vices that we don't want to cultivate in our home, instead of virtues, those virtues.
Exactly. And Noelle, not only is there this skewed idea of beauty, but also of luxury. So what is our culture misunderstanding about what is luxurious and what is not?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, I think that when we start to undervalue the deeper meaning of things, we overemphasize the superficial meaning of them. So think about with womanhood, when we undervalue the deeper meaning of women, we overemphasize their superficialities. And so I think we do the same thing with our homes. I remember reading this story about this woman who spent all this money and effort to make her home a showpiece. And when she finally finished and was finally all said and done, she realized that people in the home were an assault to her home. You know, they were a threat to what she had done, rather than making the home an instrument for their relationships and their flourishing. And so, you know, we can easily get this out of order. I have a friend once who said this beautiful statement that, you know, with God, everything can become an icon of Him. Without Him, everything becomes an idol. So do we want our home to be an icon or an idol? Beauty points us to something beyond itself, beyond the material thing itself. Luxury references ourselves. It points us back to ourselves. It's really a dead end. And so I think we have to get this right. And I think we've all had the experience of being in a home that was really, you know, significantly well done and majestic, and it feeling kind of cold and impersonal, versus being in a home that was maybe humble and modest, but you could tell that there was love there in the way that the mother framed her children's artwork, and the care that they took to make it facilitate, you know, their unity and their dinners and their, you know, their bedtime with order, but also with, you know, great love put into it. And so I think that there's an immaterial quality that really is communicated when a home is for the sake of the people and for the sake of the other.
Absolutely. So then tell me how beauty in the context of our homes and when it's properly ordered can actually be a way to evangelize.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that when people walk into a home that is built around all of those sorts of transcendentals, it really communicates something deeper than itself. I mean, you know, you feel, if you maybe came from, say, home that was unstable or broken home, and you want to feel that you're welcomed and you want to feel that you are, you know, So the people there care about who you are for the sake of who you are, for your humanness. I had a good friend who, he was evangelized by being welcomed to a family home. And the family didn't have him over with some luxurious setting. They just had him over with a takeout pizza and a bag of salad. And it really transformed the trajectory of his life, just to be in a home that was simply done, but also, welcoming to him and hospitable in that way.
And it's absolutely beautiful. And in fact, I think of Paige, because if you look at Paige, right behind her, you see the framed pictures of her children's handprints. And the world might not consider that to be luxurious, but that's really what your home is all about. Because Paige, another problem with secular design is that it doesn't take into consideration the whole person. That's something that you love talking about. So what does that mean? And also, what can Catholics do about it?
I'm glad you brought up these handprints, because they reflect a lot of parts of my spiritual journey. Number one, when you have teenagers, you need reminders that they were once little and had tiny hands. So that's one of the reasons those are up. It's also an example of dying to self, because my husband hung them, and the distance between the handprints is not equal. And so when I look at it, I die a little bit, but I let it go because it's not about being perfect. This is also not where I asked them to be hung. But dying to self is a huge part of being a woman in her home in a godly way. But yes, the whole person, pursuant to what Noelle was talking about regarding luxury, the way I see secular design today is the world of people who are truly wealthy and desiring to express that in their things, and then people who want to look like that. They want to kind of emulate wealth. There's like, if you go onto Pinterest and say, how do you make your house look expensive? There'll be thousands upon thousands upon thousands of suggestions. It is like that is the ultimate goal, is to look like you're wealthy. And that is a very hollow and empty aspiration, number one, because that's very much so shifting sands. And number two, I mean, I think, again, we miss the whole point of the home and we miss the whole person. I think, Claire was talking about the hierarchy of beauty. I think we also have to reflect the hierarchy of values. If making your house look expensive kind of rises to the top, we miss a lot of other things. So I think in thinking about the whole person, what am I valuing? What do I want to teach my children? What do we want to have them leave with? Because as your kids get older, you hear the ticking clock of when they're soon going to be living somewhere else. And you think, well, what do I want to impart onto them? How do I want to develop our relationships as they become adults? And so you start to think the best window treatments I could possibly muster actually don't move the needle on that relationship. And so again, just rightly ordering sort of the composition of the house with those relationships. I also talk a lot about seeing all of our people really, really well. I mean, it's our job as moms to be keen observers. We are biologically given the gift of being able to read faces. And so we can take this, if we are not hyper-focused on wallpaper and window treatments and lighting fixtures to perfection, which I have been, we can use that God-given talent of being face readers and taking the temperature of the house and say, you know what? I have one kid that actually likes to be a little bit by himself. Do we have a spot in the house for him to be away from the noise and the clutter and the sound? I have this one child that, my husband wants to relax in a particular way. Is there a space for that? Really seeing the needs of everybody. Mm-hmm. And then also I talk a lot about storytelling. I mean, the world wants to say, do your home this way. So then you can tell the world, I've been looking, I've been watching. I mean, a lot of times design today, what you're expressing when you copy everybody is that I've been scrolling. I've seen what everybody else does and I can copy it. I would suggest as parents, as Christians, that we say, this is our story. This is our story of coming to faith. This is how I learned about faith, hope, and charity. These are the models of faith for me, whether it was my grandparents. These are the saints that speak to me. This is what I need to remain peaceful and kind to my spouse. I think of religious art in many ways as a tool, not a reminder and a tool. Like our Mother Mary reminds me, I'm not really being like her right now. So maybe right in this particular spot in my home, I need these signposts to guide me in my way. Because the home is a sanctifying place where sometimes our brokenness comes out, right? And we see that. And I think, again, what do we need in the home? That's always what I'm thinking about.
It's brilliant. And it actually offers a lot of freedom, too, because if you're designing like window treatments, for example, in your kids' room, well, I may want the pretty aesthetic ones that match the other rooms in the house, but what if my child actually needs blackout curtains so that they can go to sleep at a reasonable hour of the night? Because, Paige, I'm a mom of four, and I know you're also a mom of four, and I'm sure there are plenty of other moms out there who are listening and wondering, well, this all sounds nice, but how can I even fathom designing a beautiful home when I have toys and crayons and all sorts of kid artifacts everywhere? How do you deal with that?
Well, the step one is understanding that it's a different version of beauty than what you are looking at mm-hmm. online. It's a different version of beauty than the catalogs that come across my doorstep. We have to understand that, you know, what Claire and Noelle were talking about also is the standard set in the world is really divorced from reality. So when I see certain catalogs and I don't see a piece of paper, a toy, evidence of any eating, drinking, book reading, I don't see evidence of real life, I could come to the conclusion that that's what my house should look like. No, I think that's what a show home looks like. That's when you want to sell furniture. That's what the house looks like. You know, we started to sell homes online, and real estate started to use the internet as a tool probably in the 2010s. And so where there was a script to sell a house online, you need to have really, really light colored walls. You need to have blown out with light, very few things, very minimalistic. That sells homes. So I think that has had a deep effect on sort of all of the online media, all of the home media that we consume. And we kind of have taken that on as maybe the standard. When you're looking at kitchen design, you see these vast kitchen islands, which serve many, many purposes and are great workspaces. But when they're photographed, there's never a dang thing on the kitchen island. Maybe a very, you know, expressive and elegant, you know, display of flowers in the center, but there's never anything. So we have to step away from that standard that we have been told and really embrace our own reality and our own season. If we have little kids and I come over to your house, I hope I see their stuff around. I hope I see that it's evidence of a home with toddlers. If you come over to my house, you're going to know that we have football players that we like, that the teams we cheer for, the books my kids are reading. I think evidence of our season is not just it's not just okay, but it's something to celebrate.
It is, absolutely. And, you know, I think of my son who leaves me little I love you, mom notes all over the house. And I will be so sad the day that I don't see those notes there anymore. Mm-hmm. And now, Claire, I know that you are a fan of Dietrich von Hildebrand. And in his book, Beauty in the Light of Redemption, he says, and I'm going to paraphrase it. He says that true beauty doesn't draw us into self-centered pleasure or impurity or untruthfulness. In fact, beauty opens our hearts and invites us into a transcendence, leading us before the face of God. That's really deep, but break it down for us and what it means and how we can work toward that pursuit of transcendence in our homes.
Mm-hmm. Firstly, thank you for bringing up Dietrich von Hildebrand. For those who don't know him, he is my hero. He is the greatest, in my mind, philosopher and theologian of the 20th century. He was actually named Hitler's number one enemy. And that just shows the power of philosophy. It wasn't a great general leading the war that Hitler was afraid of. It was a philosopher. And he did so much work in the field of beauty and true beauty. So I'm going to answer this question about how to decipher this quote with another quote of his, but it sums it up perfectly. He says, true beauty makes God known. And I, to apply that for myself and within our own home, is it's really what in our home is making God known. And it's the people in it. It's what items, what objects is making God known? What is revealing God to others? Something beautiful, a little tradition since our wedding night that my husband has done, and we added the second part once our son was born, was that my husband prays over us. He says, I consecrate our family to the Holy Family so that I become more like Saint Joseph, Claire more like Mother Mary, and Peter, our son, more like Jesus, so that we have a living Nazareth here on earth. And what happened at Nazareth? God was made known. And I think of Mother Mary. Did we care about what dishes she used? Only if it was a relic, we would care, but that's because of her virtue. And that's what we need to be doing. We always need to be pointing our beauty, the beauty of our homes, back to God and making God known within our home.
It's such a beautiful reflection too, because when we think of our own dishes too, there may be an inclination to think like, oh, this one has a chip on it, or these are mismatched, but this is like a sacred item in and of itself, because this is a vessel on which my family was fed. And I have goosebumps just thinking about that, because that's where the beauty is, and God is made known when we're sharing meals together and when we're living our life together as a family. And Noelle, we're starting to get into this. I really want to hear what you think, because when it comes to cultivating peace and prayer in the home, what are some of the spiritual and theological foundations that we should keep in mind, as well as some of the practical ones? Because I do want to make sure that our viewers and our listeners can hear some practical tools for designing their homes so they can cultivate peace and prayer.
Yeah. It's such an important question. I mean, I think that it really starts from the inside out. Our interior life is going to emanate, everything, the peace in the home is going to emanate from there. I remember when I was in the throes of kind of young kids, toddlers, being pregnant and, you know, a little overwhelmed and feeling like all of my circumstances needed to shift in order for me to have peace. You know, that kid needs to behave a little better. And then I need, you know, to get maybe a house cleaning and then I'll have peace. And I realized, oh, wait, my problem is me. My problem is myself. My circumstances need to be whatever they're going to be, and I need to find peace within them. And so I think it really starts there. There's little that we can say to our kids that's going to communicate as much as what we do. And so we have to become people of great prayer. And there's no shortcuts to that in order to help them to become people of great prayer. But more practically speaking, I mean, I like to think of two things when I think about peace in the home, one being affection and one being order. So, you know, we need to set a mood in our home of cheerfulness, of, you know, having emotional control over ourselves. If we want our kids to have emotional control over themselves, we can't expect something from them that we're not doing ourselves. And so, you know, the faith is not usually passed on just propositionally. It should be passed on in the kind of emotional ambiance that we're setting in our home. Do our kids know that they're not just loved, but that they're liked, that we actually enjoy them, that we delight in them? That's the sort of thing that will communicate an identity in Christ that will last long past the time that they've got up and left the home. So, but we also need, beyond the emotional affirmation, affection, all of that cheerfulness, we need order. The kids need some structure. They need to know where the lines are, what's expected of them. And I think those two things can kind of check each other, right? So if we are all about order, but we're neglecting the emotional tone, then we might become too rigid, too structured, too, you know, committed to the order. And then if we are too focused on the emotional tone of the home, you know, and following the kind of the capriciousness of our moods or of our kids' moods, we might forget, okay, yeah, you might be grumpy kid, but you just have to do it. You know, you just have to do this chore right now. So I think it's a nice way to balance how we're addressing kind of the peacefulness in the home and our prayer life as well.
Amen, because this is a place where our children learn about the love of God the Father, and we learn about the communion of saints primarily in the home. And now, Paige, when thinking about how to design or cultivate our homes, practically speaking, there's a temptation to conflate the two with decorating. But decorating, as we've discussed, the secular world sees that as very different than what the church sees that. So can you explain how we can design and cultivate our home in a deeper way, in the Catholic lens, and perhaps offer some advice on how we can resist the urge to over-decorate for superficial reasons?
It's a great question, and it's an important one. I've sort of struggled with the word decorating, as I kind of hate that word, but I also know it has some utility. I decorate for Christmas, and I love that process, and I think in our Christian tradition, it's a beautiful time at Advent throughout the Christmas holiday to decorate, but it has a kind of temporal quality. It has this idea that it does kind of have only a short version in which it's fresh. And certainly today, in today's, you know, marketplace, we're decorating in a way that is responding to what others are doing. So if I'm buying decorative items, I'm buying them because I've seen someone else has them and I like them. That's what we see on the big box stores and so on and so forth, or Amazon's, you know, home finds are always like, someone else has blessed this as okay, and now I'm going to put it in my house to reflect that I know that. I think we can do better than that. I think a great example of this is that decorating, when we have left the reality of how we really live, I think it ends to have a service to the home. Bookshelves are a great example. There are 9,000, you know, 9 million tutorials about how to decorate bookshelves. Well, what are bookshelves really for? I think they're for books, or they're for how you really live. Like, what are the objects of your daily life? We don't always have to falsify, you know, the image, the home, with these things that aren't really used, but are just pretty to look at. I mean, certainly there's a time and a place for something pretty and decorative that doesn't have utility, like it doesn't all have to be utilitarian. But I think that idea that every surface has to be reflective of sort of decorative items is a challenge to our reality. It's a challenge to children. If you have to constantly tell your kids, don't touch that, that's not to be used, those books are just there for show, don't open books, you know, they're just for decoration. Decorating has kind of overtaken reality, and I think that's a great disservice to the family. And by using your own life, I think we can come up with a way to decorate or respond in beauty in a way that's true for us, and I think that's much more fruitful.
Exactly. And Claire, when we as Catholic women can distinguish designing from mere decorating, there is a really amazing opportunity to not just add visual beauty to our homes, but we're also drawn to prayer. Then we can actually receive the graces from those prayers. And I think of EWTN Foundress Mother Angelica. She called them holy reminders of the love of Jesus in your heart and in your home. So how have you seen that played out in your own home and in the homes that you've entered?
I love that quote. Thank you for sharing that quote. And what comes immediately to mind is the story of Pope John Paul II when he was shot in St. Peter's Square. And afterwards, he shared that the first thing he did was look around the square immediately when he was shot. He looked around St. Peter's Square for an image of Our Lady for comfort, Mother Mary, and he couldn't see one. So afterwards, he installed in St. Peter's Square the mosaic, that beautiful mosaic of Mary, Mother of our church. And I think of that, that story illustrates beautifully in our own homes what we should be doing too, that these images of the saints, our church family, just as we put up pictures and images of our family and friends in frames, that we frame those, so too our church family. We need these images as reminders. I know personally, having beside our sink, we have a small statue of Mother Mary. She's holding some cleaning supplies. And that has helped me countless nights continue and persevere in those dishes, whether we're hosting some nights when we host, it goes really late. And that helps me persevere, but also pray for those people we just hosted. Pray for my husband and son that I'm cleaning the dishes from. It really transforms both our mind and our heart and our disposition as women within our home. And practically speaking, if you don't know where to begin, I would say, look at the devotions you have. Is it to the Sacred Heart, Jesus's most sacred heart, to the Immaculate Heart? And if you don't have those devotions yet, you could also look at the feast days of your patron saints or the day you were born. Look up whose feast day, Google that, and find those images and place them in prime spots within your home where the family comes together. And these images too serve as a form of evangelization. I'll never forget when we were living in Buffalo, and in the middle of winter, our water heater broke, and we had someone come to fix it, and we invited him for lunch, to stay for lunch, and I was going back and forth, should we? And my husband's like, no, we need to invite him in, and he kept seeing this image of Our Lady that we had on our wall from my grandmother's house, and the conversation turned to the sacraments and how he hasn't been to Mass in so long, and just that beauty of evangelization when we choose to place our church family on our walls.
Amen. And I truly did not mean for this to be a pitch for EWTN Religious Catalog, but I do have to say, because you mentioned Mater Ecclesiae, Claire, that we do have images of Mater Ecclesiae, Mary, Mother of the Church, at EWTNRC.com. We also have that Kitchen Madonna that you recommended as well, because Mother Angelica did want people so badly to make their homes places of prayer where they could be reminded of Jesus and drawn to prayer. So that is all the time that we have for today, but I promise that we will continue this discussion with this expert panel in part two with more specifics about hospitality and hosting coming very soon. And in the meantime, you can hear more from extraordinary guests like my panelists when you watch The Catholic Sphere on EWTN.com/on-demand or on EWTN's YouTube channel. Noelle Maring, Paige Ryan, and Claire Cauchy, thank you truly for joining. And thank you as well. I hope to see you again soon, right here on The Catholic Sphere.